Being in Israel for a while, you kind of get this immediate resilience factor of, oh, it's not so bad, everything will be okay. Kind of, you're kind of, in one sense, used to hearing these moments of bad news, but being like, okay, it's not here, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then it kind of just kept getting more intense. And then I think at Shul they stopped everything. They did an announcement that there was something down south, and that was a little bit more than the usual. And then everyone kind of had their individual decision whether to stay, not to stay. And I think by the end, most people started to leave. And then on the way back, I remember seeing like young men kind of running, taking their tallit off, running and switching to put on uniforms. And that was weird, because I also, my mom was in Israel during the Yom Kippur War, and I remember that was kind of her biggest memory, was seeing everyone switched during a holiday. So it's very weird to see that in Israel, especially kind of in a more religious area. We came home, and also along the way home, everyone was like, you should be inside, something's happening down south. And then it was very odd, because it was still Chag, and we didn't have all the details. And so then, obviously after Chag, we found out in more detail what was going on, and we just, in shock, completely shocked of what was happening. And it's also a bit difficult, which I'm sure everyone also mentioned, kind of how do you explain what's going on to your kids, and they're seeing you in the live, kind of, they know something's going on, especially if they're a little bit older, but still having that, okay, it's the world is kind of crumbling, but you have to be strong for your kid. So that was a bit tough. And then I remember asking Adam, like, do you think he'll be called? But backstory, he got a release from Miluim, so he hadn't been in Miluim for a couple of years by then. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, I got released, most likely won't get called. Fast forward, he ended up being called. Mm-hmm. Not that day, but yeah, it's just this kind of immediate response of, okay, you know something big's going to happen. They're calling a lot of people that you know, hearing about the rabbi being called also, and recognizing that it was a different experience than the normal, that sounds bad, but the normal kind of here and there traumatic experience that happens. This was like a very shocking experience, I think, yeah, for everyone. Maybe like a week afterwards, he heard from the logistics officer, maybe we need you, kind of, there's a lack of he's in tanks, so there's a lack of people, basically. So he kind of did a call out, and then it wasn't 100% sure, because they have to kind of re-enter him into the system. And then, so that was like a Thursday, and then we weren't really sure, and he was still like, he's very logical, so he was like, it's not for sure until they're calling me, basically. And then that Saturday night, they're basically like, you have to come up. So it was about like a week and a half afterwards, I guess, maybe. And yeah, it was that Saturday night was intense, because I also was like, I spoke to the community. I did the talk for the community about how to cope during this time that same night. So it was intense. On one hand, it was helpful to kind of be helpful to other people and hopefully use some of the tools that I'm telling people to use as well. But on the other hand, kind of being faced with the reality of being a part of it even more than I was beforehand. So yeah, so that was intense. And also with the kids, because there was a lot of uncertainty, especially with the kids. They were home from school, and they knew in general what was going on. They had friends whose parents, whose dads or moms that were called from Miluim, for reserves, and they had a sense that it was scary and unknown, but we didn't have all the answers also of kind of what it was going to be like, how much contact we would have and things like that. So it was very emotional, them saying bye to Adam that Motzei Shabbat. He was sent up north, and he was first on base for like retraining and kind of organization, and they were still calling people to create the Tzvat team, the units, and then I think like maybe a week later, he was sent to, they kind of along the border, with Israel and Lebanon, and that's where he was most of the time. When he was on base, it was much easier. There was more communication. And then when he was on the line, it was a little bit more difficult because sometimes they would just have a generator, so they would have to save the generator. So if they were in contact, it was just kind of 5-minute conversations here and there. Or if they had kind of, they couldn't be in contact because they were in the tanks or things like that. There was contact, which I'm thankful for. but there was definitely a sense of chaser, of missing, and kind of the day-to-day, and having kind of someone there make decisions with you and kind of help you through the family life was definitely missing. I remember Osher, the first Shabbat that Adam wasn't there, he was like, how can we do Shabbat? Like, I wasn't at home, and I was like, oh, that's so sad. but there were ways that I think we were able to lashlim it, and we had very, in a way, kind of special moments with the community and friends hosting us and kind of having that experience of Shabbat. On one hand, it's sad that it came about in this way, but on the other hand, to kind of also show the kids kind of a way that the community can really lashlim to fill in that missing part, especially on Shabbat. I think like the chagim that we had, Hanukkah also was part of it. Adam was home, but kind of the moments in Judaism where family is so strong and you built this family and you're all together at home and you want to kind of celebrate together, that's I think when we all kind of felt it. Mm-hmm. But the kids are strong. I think after that beginning part and once I got back into school, they got into a routine. They felt a little bit better. My parents are in Israel as well, so that was really helpful. And I think just family and friends outside Israel checking in and being there and always kind of showing their presence in one way or another was very, made us feel less alone for sure. Definitely community kind of meals and Shabbat invites and toys and the things to kind of brighten the kids up a little bit. So there was definitely, on one hand, it's something that I don't think anyone can kind of take away, this longing or this kind of loneliness and kind of worry. But on the other hand, it was definitely lashlim, it definitely filled in the practical side, the kind of just the sense of feeling you're part of something bigger, and that support. We're so grateful for that, and that definitely helped in our coping of the whole experience, I think, as well. When you're in these situations, you want to maintain kind of the standard of who you were before in terms of parenting and a mom, and just kind of, like I said, kind of being that strong force for your kids. But on the other hand, it's very, very difficult because if you see stuff on the news and you can't be in contact with your partner to see if they're okay or just in general what was happening in Israel, I feel like every day was something new. So it was very hard to kind of be 100% of what you were like before. So from a practical point of view to the emotional point of view, I definitely had to step out of my comfort zone. But it was definitely my first time inviting myself over for Shabbat. Yeah, it's scary up north as well. He's in these experiences where instead of running into the safety, the mamad or things like that, he's kind of on the opposite of kind of going into a place that kind of puts him more in danger. So I think that was a bit of a transition. One thing that at least that I think he'll take away from the experience is the kind of the brotherhood that you built there. Kind of specifically his tzevet is the four of them. A lot of them have families of themselves and they're married, and they all kind of bonded on that fact of, okay, we're leaving our families and we're in this together, and what's it like to kind of go back and forth and things like that. So I think the people that he met really kind of, that will stick with him, and kind of the connections he made there through these difficult experiences. They were kind of defending in front of the yeshuvim, or the kibbutzim that are there, so not exactly in the kibbutzim. Mm-hmm. And so they're right up there seeing the action. Yeah, there's a lot of everyday mortars or rockets, or like I said, or drones, or they think that it's a drone and they don't know, and things like that. It was amazing. Kind of in his last week, they did a lot of processing from a kind of practical point of view of what to learn from their experience to even a psychological point of view, which is, I think, says a lot about the army, from especially kind of a generation ago, I'm assuming, of kind of including this aspect of, okay, we need to process this from a psychological lens. And I think, I mean, obviously there was a difference between what's happening up north and what's happening down south. So luckily, no PTSD or symptoms. In the very beginning, we just didn't have a date of when he was going to come home. And then after 3 weeks, he came home for like 2 days, two, 3 days. That was like amazing. The kids were like, even my youngest is three, and she just like was so excited. She was just like jumping and screaming. And it was interesting, actually, before that, in the very, very beginning, when we first switched to kind of being in contact on the phone, and here and there, he'd be able to FaceTime, and she just wouldn't want to look at the video because she's like, this isn't Ava, this isn't my dad. But she got used to it afterwards. But yeah, so that was the kind of the first visit. And then after that, it was like once every 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, he was coming home. And then he finally switched to kind of a regular format of once every 10 days. And then as he got closer to the release, it was once every 1 week on, 1 week off. So I think in the beginning, the first time he visited, they didn't really know that he would have to go. I mean, they figured that he was done and that was it. So we had to explain that, no, he's got to go back. After that, they kind of realized, okay, this is going to happen a few times. And I think they got better with the transition. I think me personally, it was a little bit more difficult because I think you kind of want to do everything and reconnect and kind of build each other up and build that resilience so that you can continue on afterwards. And then they leave and then you're back to kind of the normal routine. So it was a lot of those ups and downs. But it was still, on the other hand, helpful. The more he came home, obviously, the more we felt a little bit more normal as a family. There was this trend in Israel as the war started, like back in the day when they first kind of the war independence time period. So Adam hopped on. And it's funny because in the army, they only really know him with the mustache. And so this last week when he kind of finished, he shaved it there and it was kind of a big thing. And we're happy at home that he shaved it. But yeah, I think it was also kind of in the sense to connect with soldiers, connect with the nation, what's going on from kind of a man's perspective, I guess. I think right after everything that happened, like I said, everyone was grieving, and I think part of the grieving process is, and at least in Judaism, is like you can't listen to music, and it, like on one hand, I understood that, but I always had kind of an issue with that because I feel like music could be a very a channel for your grief in a sense. But I actually kind of really felt at this experience that right after the moment, I think also on the radio, everything was kind of that Yom Kippur tinge of, or Yom HaZikaron sense of music, and everything was very solemn. And me personally, I couldn't imagine, like I didn't even want to listen to other types of music. I know it sounds weird, but I like only wanted to listen to Israeli and kind of sad music. And then one day in the middle of everything, I was alone, obviously at home, and I was working at home, and all of a sudden, it was very quiet, and all of a sudden, I hear the shofar, and it's like, it woke me up, like, how it's supposed to wake you up, which was, like, a crazy experience. All of a sudden, I hear all of the singing and dancing, and I look outside, and it was across the way, they did a bar mitzvah procedural, or whatever it's called, to the shul nearby. And I was like, first of all, I was like, okay, that's how it feels on, how it should feel on Chagim, like, it mamash, it really woke me up, just to see the music in a positive way, and to see kind of this group of the family singing on top of their lungs, happy and really, really celebrating this bar mitzvah, just like brought back the hope and the nation, and kind of, so that was one experience that I experienced during this tkufa, during this time of kind of really seeing the hope Israelis. I think that's something really unique about Jews in general, and specifically Israelis, of even in this really dark time, they can have this beautiful tradition and experience. The other thing is definitely community, of kind of, like I said, that on one hand, they can't take the full emotional anguish away from you, but from a kind of practical and a supportive lens of having community to belong and feel connected to, and all these random acts of kindness that people tapped into, and was really beautiful. And seeing how everyone came together, all walks of life, all from all over the world, was amazing. And I think that if we want to kind of balance the lens, that's what I choose to focus on in this time, and kind of what I think of the future after this.